What's going on, everyone? Happy Wednesday. Here we are in beautiful Las Vegas. I say beautiful. It actually looks like it's raining for the first time in about 4 years in Las Vegas right now. I am Jeremy Long. Welcome to Levels. And I am joined, as always, by my co-host, the Sportsnista, Cassandra Cousineau. Cece, how are you?
I'm well. Looking like I'm frozen. I could see you.
It might be me. I might be frozen.
There we go. Sort of, kind of. Keep moving around. I might jump out and come right back in. It might be the precipitation in the air.
It might be. We got a little storm clouds rolling in. And, you know, speaking of storm clouds rolling in, you like that segue there. I am very, very honored to have our guest here today. She, you know, shook up the world, so to speak. And I'm not going to go any further until Cece hops back in there. It happens on storm days. Sometimes you just, you know, you kind of, you got to roll with it. But she did. She shook up the world, ending a 13-year unbeaten streak and becomes the undisputed champion, welterweight champion. So I am so happy to have her on the program, share her story. Now the Sportsnista. There she is. Now she's waving at me again. There she is. She's back with us. Okay, it happens sometimes in storms. So without further ado, let's bring in our special guest, Cece. What do you think?
Let's go.
There she is, ladies and gentlemen. Jessica McCaskill joins us live. Hold on, everyone. The champ
is here.
Yes.
Jessica, I know you. How do you put it into words? How do you feel today? How, you know, run us through the gamut of emotions you got to be feeling over the course of the last few days.
The last few days have definitely been massively just kind of up and trying to get back to, I guess, regular life. I mean, you know, it doesn't stop, you know, here, and we want to keep going. And so, of course, I'm not allowed to do a lot of training this week, and I'm going to hop back into it next week. And that night, everything just felt unbalanced was the only word that I could really use. And time was flying by. The last time I looked at my phone, it was like 3 a.m. and, you know, lots of conversation and hanging with the crew that was there, and our phones were blowing up. So it was just a lot to take in.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Excuse me.
Take me to the moment. So you had to have known that you were ahead. You threw, what, 200 or so more punches than Cecilia did. And you were much busier. She seemed to be a step too slow for you. It was her 25th title defense. But it's not real until they say it's real. So take me to the moment when you heard and knew.
I thought my work rate was good. It was what I was used to in the gym. That was the fastest I had ever started my fights. I usually start slow, fourth, fifth round, and really get into it. And I thought I started right after the first minute of the first round and just kept going the whole time. And so I felt very confident in my output. But like you said, it's not real until they say it. And when they had that long dramatic pause and finally said, and the new, I mean, it was everything that I had sacrificed, you know, the entire year, and everything that our team had put in and surviving quarantine and just all the work that we had done finally came to that one moment. And it was pretty epic.
Now, of course, you are, you know, awarded these belts and everything, the new title. What was that celebration like? How did, you know, I don't want to get nobody in trouble. How did you guys celebrate?
We didn't do anything really crazy. I think one of the biggest parts was my coach and manager, Rick Ramos, had put out this picture November 8th of 2018, where we had photoshopped my head on Cecilia's body with the belts. Because it was something that we had been looking for years. I met Cecilia in 2017 in Vegas. At the Holly Holm cyborg fight. And, you know, we just had it in our heads ever since then that this could happen. And so we wanted to pose with the belts in the exact order that, you know, that picture was in. But the celebration, we were still kind of in a bubble and still had to quarantine to an extent. So we had like fast food and ice cream.
Nice, nice ice cream. That's
I can't imagine. Yeah. There's like, I don't know what is what are the choices like in Tulsa for fast
well,
food?
We were in the hotel, and so you have like this mini bar of like you can have these chips or like these candy bars, and we Uber Eats some burgers and fries. So it was minimal, but it was exactly what we wanted and what we needed at the moment.
I say I used to live in Tulsa, so you know the options are kind of limited there. But you may do. Yes. So of course you're the new champ of the world and everything. But let's back the story up a little bit. Let's get back to a little bit of your beginnings, where you came from, how you grew up. You know, because it's a really inspiring story. Because if I'm not mistaken, at one point you were homeless.
Yep. Yep. So I grew up in Belleville, Illinois, which is southern Illinois, close to St. Louis, Missouri. Yeah. And my mom, she just had like a bad divorce. And in the fourth grade, we were homeless. We were living in the back of a church for a handful of months. And I just gathered so much of my strength and just the feminine power that I have from my mom's, from seeing her, you know, survive those moments and lead us out of that and still hold it together during everything. And just after that, we got on our feet and, you know, I didn't start boxing until I was in my mid-20s. And I've always done sports. I've always been very competitive and athletic. And it's one of those things where I feel like boxing just really fell into my lap. And I've just kind of taken everything that I've learned from being that young child in the back of a church and just being relentless, even though, and gone through all of the training, sparring with guys, and either because back in the day there weren't that many females to have on your team, up to now where I want to be the best competition out there. And so, you know, it's just one of those things where everything just kind of works together for the good of your career.
What was the first gym you went to?
It was in St. Louis, and it was actually a like a kickboxing gym. And I was doing a kickboxing class for about a month. And once I realized I had no desire to kick above my head and stretch my legs so much all the time, there was another gentleman that was teaching boxers in that same gym. So I just kind of transferred over to him, and he had actual fighters, and I wanted to be a part of that. And I wanted to train and spar and then have my first exhibition bout and my first real fight, first tournament. And I just wanted to hit those marks, and it just kind of exploded into me being a professional fighter.
So definitely no, I mean, you don't like kicking above your waist or anything. So definitely no MMA in your future, no anything like that, right?
Well, I mean, there were a couple of points in my career after moving to Chicago where we were going to take some big leaps. BKB was part of a possible plan at one point before we got on a certain level. And it was just that we were looking for something bigger and something better and more excitement, and really to be able to showcase our skills. And BKB was still kind of new, and that caught really quick. I mean, I think Rick put something out on Twitter, and then they called him, they added him, they like the whole shebang. And it was like, whoa, this could happen. So I just kind of got ready to fight bare knuckle. I think I was hitting the bag that day with just my hand wraps on just to start getting ready.
Wow.
Yeah.
Holy cow. So you've had just what, 13 fights?
That was my 11th
total
fight.
Professional. Okay. So 11 fights in, and you are the WBO, the WBA, the IBO, IBF, and the Ring Magazine champion. Where are the belts? That's a lot of belts. Where are they?
They gave me a WBC to go home with. And so I currently have with me my WBC and my WBA from my past fight. So let's see if I can turn this
around. Oh, yeah. We got to see. Oh, look at that. Beautiful.
So that's what I have on me. And I have been contacted by the IBO, and they said my belt is in the mail. So hopefully that puts a little pressure on everybody else to kind of ante up and join the party.
They don't send like somebody to the door like, here, Jessica, here's your belt. In the mail.
They'll send it, and they'll overnight it, and they'll send you the tracking, and that's fine with me. Some people will ask you to actually come out, so I might be going to Cali or Mexico to pick up a couple things as well. So that's fine.
Cecilia Brækus was making her 25th title defense. She had held all those belts for 13 years. I saw a clip of her coming into the locker room, and you had an embrace, and she said, take good care of them. have you talked with her since? Did you get a text message? Like, have you thought for a moment how she must feel going through this?
I've only had one other fighter that I've had competition with that we stay in touch with, that we're Facebook friends. Other than that, I'm not used to having like an ongoing relationship with my opponents, mm-hmm. but I did want to be the one to give her her belt back because I do have respect for what she has done in the game. And, but my goal is to always upset the party, and the bigger than the higher you make the stakes for me, the more I'm going to come hungry for it. So, you know, we had a small conversation. We've always been cordial in person in 2007 when we met. And then she asked me to come be a sparring partner for a camp that she had. And we declined because, again, we thought we may come against her as an opponent one day. I was going to be her last fight on the HBO on the HBO channel, and we were in negotiations, and Eddie asked us to just let that fight expire and we would work with him. And so we did. And so it was just getting closer and closer and closer over the years. So in between all of that interaction and going through the press conferences and having Zoom meetings like this, there was never any bad blood. Like she said, it was just, you know, two professionals wanting to do the best for the sport.
Eddie Hearn just over an hour ago announced that he is going to start negotiations for the rematch. Have you heard about this? And how do you feel about the rematch?
She says
she might be done. So
she definitely alluded to a partial retirement speech, but I think it's hard to just take a fighter out of the fight. And that's a hard call to make. And you don't really see a lot of people that actually do it. You see them say they retire and then they come back and play that in and out game a little bit. I think she'll wake up in 2 weeks and decide that she does want to fight and she does want to have a rematch. How soon that will be, I don't know. We do have to wait to see what happens this weekend with, Katie and Delphine. So, we're just kind of waiting right now.
You fought Katie. You lost that decision. You looking for that rematch?
Yes, definitely. That's something that we've always looked for. Every time we've had a fight, I've had a fight since then. You know, I've grown dramatically. I've gotten a lot more wisdom in boxing IQ. My body's gotten immensely better with the strength and conditioning and training that we do. So it's just a matter of time before that happens. And when it does, you know, Katie's going to see a lot different of a fighter in me.
Jeremy, we've had a lot of champions and fighters from all kinds of promotions and different stages. Do you recall ever talking to someone who has had this great of an upset win on the record?
This great of an upset? No. At one point, I mean, you were trending as one of the largest underdogs in boxing history. At one point, I know it came up a little bit and kind of evened out a little bit. But, I mean, not a whole lot of people gave you that much of a chance, especially against, you know, such a long-reigning champion and everything. So to come in there and really, you know, I said it earlier kind of laughingly, but you really went in there and kind of shook up the boxing world and shook up women's boxing in general. You know, I guess, can you describe to us, I mean, being a part of that moment in history? I mean, your legacy is cemented. Whatever you do from here on out, your legacy is cemented in this. Yeah. How does that feel? Can you describe that for us and what that means to you personally?
That's the goal. I mean, I've always been the underdog, even from my very first fight where my opponent had fights before me. And so it's kind of a mindset of knowing that even though I am the underdog, that's okay. And that's something that I can overcome. And just being able to do that and show that is pretty amazing. But at the same time, that's exactly what we expect. We weren't surprised by the win. We were very happy about the win, but that's what we expected. And to the point where I think a morning or two after the fight, I look at my coach Rick and I said, do you feel different? Because people are asking me like, how do you feel? And it's like, do you feel different? Because I don't think I really feel different. Like, I'm happy, but you know, I want to work, and I want, you know, another fight, and I want to keep going, and I want to continue to do things for the sport and to be able to do what I've done and have my name in the history books and to be in the Hall of Fame, you know, coming up soon. Like, that's what the plan was. And that's makes me very happy to be able to do it.
So it's one thing to get the belts. It's another thing to keep those belts. And you sound, I mean, honestly, I mean, you're so calm and relaxed, but you sound like someone who is, I mean, for lack of better words, you sound like someone who's just getting started. You feel like this is just the starting point for you.
I feel also like that may be the case, but when you think about maybe the last six fights I've had, they've all been for title shots or belts, you know, and that's over half of my career. And so, you know, I feel like I've done a lot for the little time that I've had. And Ricky told me from the very beginning, your career is going to go fast. And I don't know if it was because of him kind of seeing women's boxing and the trend and the curve and how it was forming, or if it was because of my age and just knowing how people were going to react to that, if that was, you know, what they were focused on. But he prepared me for a fast track career, and that's where we're at. And I don't know, you know, how many fights we have left, or even targeted opponents, mm-hmm. how many targeted opponents we have, especially if Cecilia retires, and then it's, you know, that's one that's down. That's not a rematch that I can get. So it's really about what the other girls are putting on the table as well.
Because you went up to 147 for this fight, correct? So yes. Really, you could hold up two divisions at some point if you want to. But boxing is not your day job right now. is that so you are a trader? Is that correct? In Chicago?
Yes, I work in investment banking. I don't trade myself. My coach and manager, Rick Ramos, he is a trader. So he's one of those guys yelling in the pit, you know, being all crazy. But yeah. I work behind the computer, and I'm crunching numbers all day. And that's my day job. Yeah.
Is that how y'all met? Because you have so much in common, and you happen to be an athlete. He happens to be a coach and trainer, and you both are in investment. How did that happen?
That was purely by coincidence. Once I got to Chicago in 2012, it took 9 months for me to find Body Shop Boxing Club, where Rick Ramos is the manager, owner, trainer there. I would go to different places on my run. I would call and email people. Nobody answered me back. When I talked to people face to face, they would say, this is an MMA gym and we don't really do boxing here, or this is a boxing gym, but we don't really hit people. And I'm thinking, I gotta punch somebody in the face. This isn't gonna work. So this was right around the time when Instagram was coming out, and I thought to myself, this isn't gonna last. And so I never joined it until then, and I figured out the hashtags. And so I started searching Chicago female fights and Chicago boxing fights, and I found Rick had an all-female show that November. So this was September of 2013. I saw his post and I said, I have to get on that card, because I hadn't had an amateur fight since early 2012. So I'm thinking, I got to get back into it. And so I contacted him and I said, hey, I'm a fighter looking for a coach and a place to train. And I saw you have a fight coming up. And he has this mentality of, you know, some people can be really bold over text or even over the phone when you're calling. And he just said, okay, we'll just show up. And that was his way of seeing if I was serious. And I showed up the next day and I took some classes, and I was doing like burpees, like jumping up in the air and like slapping my knee. I wanted to be noticed and I wanted to work. And so he asked me some questions and, you know, my intent, and he had me spar the next day with one of his top girls, and I put her down with a body shot, and I just thought to myself, I'm in. Like, wow. I just passed the interview and we just started working from there.
I tell you, I was covering the UFC heavyweight championship fight on Saturday, but I got DAZN. And it was a lot going on that night. There were several fights. So I had it, and Marlon Vera, who had upset Shane O'Malley, Jeremy, was mm-hmm. at the podium being interviewed, and I saw the result, and I was like, oh my God. And everybody turned around, and like, we were all spread out. So people heard, but they couldn't see what I saw. And then slowly there was a line of news anchors and media people behind me. And somebody, I ain't going to say who it was, over at the NBC station, they want some money on you. So they were super pumped. And so it was something that was happening, I think, like all around the world in little spaces where people were catching wind of what you did. The next day, I was putting up a post of you holding the belts, and my daughter, who's six and right now stealing a cupcake, she said, "Oh my God, is that real?" Like, she saw all the belts and she was just so in awe of the fact that that could happen for one person. When in your life, because at nine, you're homeless. So between nine and now, when in your life did you realize, you know what, I could have all the belts?
I think just coming out of those situations, I realized that I can overcome anything. And, you know, the hard work will just lead me anywhere. And, you know, I started out with just small things, and those things got bigger, and kept those things. And then those things got bigger. And it's one of those things where you don't see it in the moment. And then when you look back, you're like, I had duct tape on my shoes when I first came here, you know, and just small things like that, that you don't really realize. And then it's important to look back, and it's important to kind of recant those memories and those stories, because that's things that you have to share with other people. And so, you know, I didn't always tell my story of being homeless. It was just part of my past. It was something that I lived through, and, you know, it's time to get up and go to work the next day. And then when you share that and you realize the emotion that you have behind it, it's time to start really kind of giving yourself some therapeutic, you know, moments. And then when you share that with somebody, they could have, you know, had all the money in the world, but there's something in their life that they tie that emotion to and that inspiration to, and it's really contagious. And so I feel like it's my job, it's my duty to really just do as much as I can with outreach and share my story for those who will take anything from it that's positive.
And I hear that you do. I had a friend reach out today, Jamil Brown. He said he's going to watch today. He said that you were such a humble champion and that you do a lot of work and outreach in Chicago with young people. Can you explain that?
In Chicago, in Belleville, where I grew up, I've gone back to my grade school and my junior high, where there are kids that are in those same neighborhoods that aren't the best, and kids that are homeless right now. And to just be able to tell them, like, it's going to be okay, and you just have to fight through this and be strong. And one day you'll look back and you'll see that, you know, you're a stronger person than you ever thought you could be. Just to be able to do that for people that are going kind of through that same trail in life that I went through, there's an unbelievable feeling to that. And I hope that one day those kids will do the same thing. They'll reach back to somebody once they're an adult or once they've gotten past those moments. And we just have to keep pulling each other forward. You know, sometimes there's so many people trying to push you down and hold you back. Yeah. Or climb past you. And it's like, let's just do this all together. It's kind of like when I got so many notifications from different female boxers just saying, hey, great job, from different, you know, weight classes, from different parts of the world. And I just thought, wow, that is like so remarkable that they would reach out to me or my manager and just say, hey, great job. Because in a sport like this, where you're literally fighting everybody, there's times when people will try to hold you down or speak negatively against you. And it was just nice to have a competition against someone who just wanted to be professional. It's okay to tell somebody you want to knock them out. You know, that's part of the whole gambit.
So, Jeremy and I say it to each other all the time.
All the time.
Yeah. And so just being able to bring somebody, you know, into a positive space is so powerful on so many levels.
levels to this. Now there are a number of issues in boxing, especially in women's boxing right now. You know, number one is the pay disparity. I mean, you just became, I mean, you got all the belts. Mm-hmm. You did the champion of all of everything, and you still got a day job. Can you imagine a Canelo Alvarez being a tax attorney, you know, being the champion of the world right now? I mean, what are your thoughts on the pay disparity between men and women in boxing? And do you see it trending in the right direction?
Now, I will say that my choice to work is exactly that, my choice to work. I've always just been really influenced by the 90s corporate woman kind of vision, I guess, from when I was a child. And I have a passion for corporate America. And so I choose to work. I probably could not work at this point, but there's so many people that will undercut themselves, or they won't be prepared to put on the show that is required to get those paychecks. You can't say, hey, pay me all this money, and then when you get a phone call, say, oh, I'm not really in the gym right now. I don't know what that means. I'm in the gym every day. I was in the gym Sunday when we got off the plane. True, it was for, you know, a little bit of a celebration party, but, you know, we're there every single day. Even if I'm not working out, I'm there to pick up deliveries or to answer the phone or to take out the trash. You know, no days off is a motto that we have. And it's a mindset, and it doesn't necessarily mean I'm going to go run every day, but it means that I'm going to put forth a strong effort every day for the passion that I have. So you can't really ask for things that you're not working for, that you can't fill out in your resume. And if somebody's offering you something that you think is below, you know, your pay grade, then don't take it. And people are taking it. And that's what's lowering some of the prices in female boxing.
The WBC has come out and said that you have the WCB belt, and it WBC. Come on, Val, put it in the right spot. But you have the championship belt. It doesn't say female championship belt. And what do you make of that? And is it time now, finally, for the women to have 3-minute rounds?
I commend them for putting everyone on an equal level. I'm a big advocate for raising the bar for boxing in general. I mean, it's great for the men and the women to be equally competitive with the type of fights that we put on, for being ready for the fights, for you know, accepting fights. You know, some people will kind of handpick things. And, you know, when I first started, we stayed in the gym because we might get a phone call, an opponent might drop out, and we might be the B side, and we might have a chance to upset somebody, but we were always ready. And, you know, the men need to be able to do that. You know, I won a round of the year last year with the WBA fight that I fought Anaïs Sanchez in May. And it was the 10th round that won me that fight, because we didn't stop fighting. We went the whole way, you know, banging. And sometimes you have guys or girls that'll just kind of pick and just try to win the fight in an easy way. And I'm in there for entertainment. You know, I'm in there for the fans. So it's just about putting it all out there in every aspect that you can. And as far as the 3-minute rounds, we train on 3-minute rounds and 30-second rest. And so we're ready for if that moment comes, or if they change it from 10 rounds to 12 rounds, we'll be ready for that because our training is there. But I'm siding with the health officials, and whenever they say it's time, then that's time. One of the major points that my coach and manager, Rick Ramos, always says is that we have such a shallow pool of females as it is. And then you extend that time, and then people start getting hurt, and then you have 30 days, 60 day suspensions, and that pool of women start to shrink. And then the number of fights we have starts to shrink. And so we're getting rid of female boxing kind of on accident if we do that too soon.
Good point. I think so. What you're saying is you're for it. There just needs to be a reasonable buildup to allow it to happen.
Yes.
So we have some questions from some of our watchers are leaving comments in here that I can see. I'm going to get to those in just one second before we wrap it up with you. But the other issue, and this may be an issue, is some athletes care about it, some athletes don't. So it may be an issue you don't really care about. A number of female athletes are always seemingly in the crosshairs of people on Twitter and things like that for using their sexuality to move the needle a little bit. Later on this week, we have from Bellator, we have Valerie Letourneau, and then we have Ebony Bridges, who's a boxer out of Australia. And of course, they're beautiful women, and they use that, they flaunt that. What is your thought on it? I mean, being in boxing and everything, I mean, what is your, do you care at all? Does it matter to you? Or if, hey, God gave it to you, you might as well.
From my point of view, I just try to keep everything focused on the boxing, focused on the sport. It's not amazing when somebody hops in my inbox and says, "You're beautiful," or sends me heart eyes. You know, that's, I'm looking for, what do you think of the fight? You know, let's talk about the skills of the fight. Let's talk about the business of the fight. I don't really post a lot of myself. You know, I have modeling pictures from back in the day and things like that, but that's going to distract people away from the thing that's my breadwinner and the thing that's putting me in the history books. And when I'm really focused on what my goals are, my priorities are, showing my body is not part of that. I mean, heck, I fight in the shorts and sports bra. I mean, what more can you ask for?
Yeah. I don't know. There's lingerie. I don't know. Hey, to each their own. So, you know, these things go to, let's see here. Go ahead, Cece, if you have a question. I'm going to get
You just came off the biggest fight of your career, but we're in a pandemic. What was your training like?
Because we were in a pandemic, we and the gym had a couple of changes that we had to make just to make sure that everybody was safe. So for a while, we did not have classes and we were only doing one-on-one training. And so we had maybe five people in the gym at one time. And so it was one of those things where you really had to use your thinking cap as a business owner or being a part of a business to stay afloat and stay alive. And Rick did an amazing job with keeping pay up and keeping income coming. And we actually made more money during the pandemic than we did before the pandemic. So there was a lot of lessons learned, a lot of things that we were able to trial and error in the pandemic. But as far as my training, you know, as long as we just kind of kept everything in-house with the people that we knew were quarantining, the sparring partners that we had, the only places I really go are at home and to the gym. I work from the gym on my computer and my screens and everything. So we were kind of self-quarantining anyway. And then that was helpful because when we got to the fight, of course, we were in a bubble, not really able to leave. So it was almost like we were prepared for anything that was thrown at us during the fight.
How's your family support? Who are your biggest cheerleaders?
My mom came all the way from St. Louis to house sit for me. I have two pit bull rescues. And so she dog sat for me. And she's a big fan. And she knows that I'm just kind of wild. I grew up with three older brothers in the house. And so I was climbing trees, running around barefoot and just being, you know, wild child me. And so it doesn't surprise her that I'm in the boxing sport. She said she was a little nervous around 3 o'clock and she's a prayer warrior. So she prayed and she said she felt very confident. And so she was watching as well.
Which one of your brothers gives you the hardest time? There got to be one.
The one that's right above me in age, Justin, he always gave me trouble when I was little. And so just like that annoying older brother, but he's so proud and he's very excited. Like he's in Atlanta and he came to Chicago. And I think one day just people were talking of me like during a dinner at some steakhouse. And he was just like, "You're famous." And I'm like, "No, I just, no."
Of course. I mean, you were the baby. You stole his thunder. So I mean, yeah, I understand. I'm the youngest too. So I stole thunder, of course.
There you go.
I was cute and everything. So there you go. Okay. So we got a couple of comments here from some fans. Alan, who is a sports journalist. That's a great question. Can she combine all those belts to one gigantic monster belt? I think you absolutely should.
Oh my gosh.
You're the first one to come out with one that's about.
My gosh. That would be 6 feet wide.
Yeah, like Game of Thrones had the Iron Throne. You come out with one giant belt all melted together. Sky wants to know, does a champ like hockey? Do you follow the other sports?
I used to be a big fan and follow the St. Louis Blues. I'm a St. Louis Cardinals fan as well.
Yeah, I know. All right. Well, that's all we have time for, Jessica. All right, you got to go. Are you a Rams fan or do you follow football?
I was a Vikings fan. I mean, being here in Chicago, I catch from all sides because I'm not a big Chicago sports fan, but that, you know, I've just followed sports my whole life and I've already had my teams pre-picked, so that's not my fault.
They blame other people.
Guy also says he has a new crush. There you go. So whether you like it or not, you got a new fan in Sky.
Boxing. Sky.
I know, Sky. Come on, man. A couple weeks ago, he said I was his new crush. I don't blame him. Coach Abel Sanchez and Rick Ramos have the same philosophy of the minute round. Agreed, yes. Let's see who. Oh, look. Rick Ramos. Pick it up. Rick Ramos. Everyone's looking.
That's him.
Mike Baker. Whoa, and he also follows up. Vikings, yes, I know, Vikings.
She said it. We heard her say that. Yep. Since we know that Rick is watching, tell me about what you learn about the boxing business. And you come from a corporate world as it is, and then being an athlete in a very unusual industry as boxing is. What have you learned about the business of boxing over the years?
Rick has been very instrumental in just being so transparent with the things that he knows and teaching me while he's learning, and just the different, you know, aspects of everything and how to approach different things and what to expect from people and just from amateur to pro, everything. I've learned so much from him, and we're talking about the managerial side, the coaching side. He's prepping me to sign fighters, you know, once the day comes where I do retire and I'm not fighting anymore. I do want to be involved in the sport continuously. So he's been there to teach me a lot of different things.
There's a whole lot of what I call quality BS in the boxing world. Some of it is low quality BS, and some of it is real high quality BS. I'm sure you're able to spot that stuff a mile away.
Yes, with my expert training eyes that I've gotten from Rick, yes.
So, I mean, obviously the question always has to end with, you know, what's on the horizon for you? What's next? What do you have, you know, coming up? I mean, I know it's too soon for fights, but what do you see in the immediate future for yourself?
We have to see what happens with Katie Delphine this weekend, but I would love to have a fight in December. And then, you know, if we're talking about fights, there's that. And we also have talked to Amanda Serrano's camp. We both would love to put on that fight. Ooh. That would be great. Yeah. And then when you're not talking about the fights directly, we're talking about getting into the Hall of Fame and solidifying, you know, what we've done for the sport. We're talking about Rick getting Trainer of the Year, me getting Fighter of the Year. I mean, there's so many things to kind of get through the end of the year in hopes to see that come to fruition.
Who you got in that fight?
I want Katie to win because I want to be the one that beats her. So I hope that she's on her game and focused. And I know she's not really thinking about me, and that's fine because I want her to get that McCaskill-Taylor 2 rematch going, you know, and we'll talk about that later. So she has to win first.
Yeah, great minds think alike.
Do you think she won the first fight?
I think she majorly underestimated Delphine. I've always been aware of Delphine because I started off in the 135 class, and of course Delphine was number one when I first started, and I thought I'm gonna have to fight that girl one day and I'm gonna have to beat her, because I was always looking to the top and, you know, just knew that that's where I wanted to be. And so I think I've known that she's aggressive. I know she comes forward, and I think Katie made the wrong game plan to stand in there and bang. And just looking back at some of the pictures that they're posting from that first fight, Katie was beat up pretty bad, and I think she just had the wrong game plan. So it was really close. And I think it was maybe too close to tell, and it should have been a draw.
I agree there. I thought it was a draw, but you know, I'm not a judge. So
ain't nobody paying you to judge a fight.
we get the opportunity to sit here and talk about it and everything. You know, and honestly, kind of going back to your fight, when you were in there, you came out hot and heavy. You were throwing punches and punches. You were doing, you know, working your fight and your game plan. At what was there a point where you were just kind of like, you know what, I felt her power. I'm seeing her skill. I'm catching her when she's coming in. I'm fighting my kind of fight. I think I might have this in the back. Or was that? Do you not allow yourself to think that way when you're in the middle of it?
The things that I think of is, you know, you always get that test of what their power's like. And I've always eaten everybody's punches that I've ever come up against with no problem. And that was a situation where I felt her power. I was not impressed. And then that gave me more just more drive to just keep pushing forward and take a punch to get a punch if I had to, make it ugly if I had to, and just keep pushing forward. And I know my work rate was high because that's just how we train. My coach is over there counting the punches when we spar. Like to average 120 or more punches in a 3-minute round. So, you know, you break down that time to 2 minutes, and that's even more incentive to really go and really push because you have a minute less than what you're used to doing on a regular basis. There were a lot of opportunities where I was able to execute exactly what we had practiced. We had practiced being in close quarters, not being able to use one side or the other, and dipping in and getting those uppercuts right up the middle. And I was able to do that several times with the right uppercut. And so it just seemed like everything was falling into place, just how we saw it happening. So I just felt confident.
Who hits harder, Cecilia or Katie?
Katie's very slappy. You know, very, very quick kind of amateur Olympic kind of style where you get the point and that's what you're really worried about. You're worried about getting that touch, that point. Cecilia, she's not very slappy, but I think they both maybe would punch the same. My sparring partners, like Summer Lynn, she's 147 as well. Professional 2-0, she punches harder. I would not like to get punched by her without headgear and 10-ounce gloves.
Well, you know, looking at your own sport, kind of looking in, are there any fighters that you really like to watch and you're a fan of, or is it all just kind of their work colleagues?
I watch a lot of men's fights. So I watch Fernando Vargas. My coach said a long time ago that I remind him a lot of Fernando. He's a very nice guy. Canelo, I love watching Canelo. He has a lot of good combinations and he's able to execute things. And so I watch and I look for how, what I could do better with some of his combinations. And Cotto, his movement, his kind of back and forth on the ropes, and you don't really know where he's going to go next. I love that. So those are my top three.
Okay.
You're watching a lot of men's boxing. Do you watch your opponents? Do you do any scouting or you just fight your fight?
I don't watch tape. And I think it's a little poisonous to watch tape. Because I've done it once, and that was for a smaller belt that I won a handful of fights back. And I was waiting for this girl to do this triple jab thing that she would do on tape. She would do this triple jab, and then we would counter that. And I'm waiting for her to do it, and she never did it. And then I found myself doing it, and then it was weird. So I don't really watch tape unless there's something specific that my coach wants me to watch. I've maybe seen a total of 3 or 4 rounds of Cecilia's. It's just not something that interests me.
Do you watch your own fights?
I do. And normally I will watch my fights about 4 times. I will watch for my offense, my defense, their offense, their defense. And then of course, if my coach wants to go over things, we'll do that as well.
How many times are you going to watch this fight?
I watched it almost right after we watched it once. I don't know if you guys have ever seen Drunk History.
Yes.
We're doing a some kind of a rendition of that on a Zoom call.
Fun.
That's
going to
be on Thursday.
Nice.
That's awesome.
We're going to go over it a couple of times, I'm sure. But we've only seen it once so far.
Is that going to be public? Can anyone join that?
I don't know if it's going to, I don't know if they're going to put the meeting.
They're like IG Live. Yeah.
Y'all can mute me. I just want to watch. I just want to be a fly on that wall.
I think it is going to be available to the public eventually.
You know what? If Dana White is on here, I think that's a UFC Fight Pass. I think fighters should drunk watch their last fight.
That yes. would be-
always.
That would be amazing. Get some Joe Rogan action in there. That would be awesome.
Absolutely. Or did you see it when Snoop was in there? I think that would be hilarious too.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty damn funny.
Yes.
And final question, Sky Moore wants to know, what do you think about Oscar? These guys coming out of retirement, Oscar coming out, Mike Tyson, Roy Jones.
That's the point that I'm trying to make is, you know, somebody will say retirement and it, even if it's years later, they come out. So, I mean, I'm not surprised. And, you know, it's one of those things where you see a good movie and then like 10, 15 years later, they do a remake. And it's just like, you're used to that now, you know?
Yeah.
So that's kind of what it is.
Yeah. Oscar coming out of retirement seems to go hand in hand in a conversation about Drunk History, because at this point, man. Folks kind of forget because Oscar's had some interesting things happen to him since he's retired last. Folks forget, though, how bad Oscar was.
Oh, yeah.
You know? Yeah. Like he was.
I'm not discounting the man's legacy. I'm not discounting his legacy. But legacy in his prime.
Legacy.
Boy, it was something else. But
yeah,
he's had a few situations come up. That
I'm not trying to drag Jessica into that crazy conversation that I'm trying to have. But
well, I got you know what? I want to thank you so much for your time. I have one final question. I know Cece has one. Before we let you go, we know you're busy doing, you know, beating up your brother and stuff like that. So, you know what? I wanted to know, I completely forgot my question. So I'm going to let Cece go and then I'm going to.
It was a drunk history. That's all.
It was the drunk history. I was actually, I was thinking about Oscar De La Hoya in lingerie. So.
See, it was almost like
there it is.
I'm gonna do the Men in Black thing on you. I'm gonna do the Men in Black.
I need that. I actually would request that at this point.
Clear that up for you.
Pictures pop right back into my head.
So my last question is: we're gonna stay with legacy and championships. When you go into the Women's Boxing Hall of Fame, which you will, what do you want them to say about you first? Are they going to talk about the championship belts, that fight? Are they going to talk about some things you've done in your legacy?
I think I want to just be remembered as the fighter that fought for the people. I always tell people the belts aren't just for me. They're for everybody. I don't care if there's fingerprints on it. I don't care if there's, you know, smudges and sweat. I want everybody to touch it, to feel it, to have it, because this isn't just something I'm just going to put in a nice case. If it inspires and changes people's lives, then I want to be the one that shares that.
I don't want nobody touching her belts right now while we're in a pandemic. So y'all take pictures and do not touch Jessica's belts.
Absolutely. Okay. So, you know what? It's so funny because, you know, Anna Hulatin, you know, was on our show a long time ago. And of course, at the time she had her WBC belt and I went to touch it and she kind of flinched at me. And I was like, Oh, don't be grabbing champs' belts without permission. I'm going to let the boys and girls out there know. Finally, you know, your connection with young girls and how you grew up and just everything you've gone through and now here you are. You know, what is that, I guess, piece of advice? What is that moment you look at, you know, young women, of course, women everywhere are having the last few years have been brought to the forefront like they should be, you know, on this platform and everything. But what is that piece of advice? What's that motivation to tell these young women, you know, hey, hang in there, you know, it gets better? Or what would you tell
them? I used to spread this vibe of, you know, to be yourself. And, you know, I think some people can kind of undercut what that means. And so lately I've been really going with this vibe of, you know, dare to be great. There's so many people on so many levels, different ages that want to do something, anything. I want to run a 5K. I want to get a promotion. I want to do something major in my life. And they're afraid to do it. And it's just, they're okay with not trying. And it's okay if you fail. So dare to be great. Doesn't matter what it is that you're trying to do. Just jump out and do it. And if you fall flat on your face, then try it again and keep trying until you get closer and closer and closer. I literally get punched in the face to get the reward that I'm looking for. And so, you know, if that motivates somebody to take an extra step somewhere, that's what I wanted to share with people.
There Fantastic. You have it. Fantastic. You know what? I already see. I mean, years from now, whenever you decide it is your time to hang it up and walk away, I see second careers. I mean, you should be on ESPN. You should be on DAZN breaking down these fights and at least, at the very least, a motivational speaker.
I do a little bit of that now. And so, yeah, I think that's going to be the coming up, the next step in my life. Yeah.
You definitely, if you haven't considered it yet, you definitely should write a book about your life. You should go on tour. You should.
There's been talk about a movie actually, so that's been circulating a lot lately. So we're getting there.
There you go, a movie. Good. You broke it here. We're gonna have a movie with the champ. I like
that. How about that? But, been such a pleasure. We've been talking with Jessica McCaskill, the undisputed welterweight champ at 147. Y'all gonna hear about her.
Yeah. If you don't know, you're about to. And here was your introduction. Jessica, thank you so, so much for your time. Congratulations again on your victory. We cannot wait to see what's in the future for you, what's in store. And you send me that Zoom link and I will be in there. And I promise I won't say anything. I just want to hear. So thank you so much, Jessica.
Thank you, guys. It was a pleasure.
Thank you. Take care.